Hello, everybody. I want to discuss sex after affairs. When I talk about that part of my life, there is no glitz and glamour to infidelity in my view, because you can't fully enjoy the sneakiness and the deception that occurs. And I'm specifically referring to my early young adulthood, late adolescence, if you will. Early 20s, that too. From what I remember, myself and them, I lived with them sometimes. So there was shacking up and living together outside of marriage sometimes, meaning half of my clothes and half of my items was in my college dormitory, and the other half were in their homes. So I would take my clothes and my items and go to different homes of theirs and stay the night. I was a part-time live-in lover, sleepovers for short. And the obvious did happen, sex. And their kids were used to me. Some weren't in any relationships. Some didn't have any children. So whoever came over, it could be their relatives, it could be friends, some colleagues. They were used to me, and they all liked me because, you know, we were, you know, respectful to one another. And again, I'm not proud of that part of my life. Because I know that when people talk about these things, it's easy to be salacious and it's easy to be distasteful, and that's not what I'm about. I talk about this because there is a healthy sex life after affairs. I know for myself, I understand. I don't like to see people as temptations. But what I figured out is how to not put myself and not have anyone put me in any kind of toxicity of any sort. This is what I mean. I understand what my triggers are and are not. I didn't back then, but I do now and forevermore. I know what my strengths and weaknesses are. I didn't fully get it then, but I absolutely fully get it now and forevermore. I understand to be mindful of sensations, to be mindful of the difference between need to hear, want to hear, the difference between victor complexes and trauma complexes. So now that I have all those things fully figured out for myself, I know that I will never again be in any kind of sexual insanity ever again. So for me, also sexually, I had to recognize the danger of emotional unavailability. A person who, you know, just people that I've had to consider over the years of my life, there was a lot of emotional unavailability, especially in sex, that I was accustomed to. Unfortunately, misfortunately, I just made up that word because I am that bright and I can do that. So I had to discover that emotional unavailability. Emotional unavailability comes to sex is disastrous and catastrophic. Here's what I mean. I don't want to sleep with anyone that ignores me, ignores my needs, ignores my desires, will say the most foolish things during sex, call out the wrong name during sex, asking the type of questions that make me not want to climax nor orgasm with them, goes to sleep right after, is quick to put me out so fast, and, you know, I don't want a selfish lover. I don't want a situation where my sound needs, environmentally speaking, for sex are diminished. My furniture needs when it comes to sex are diminished. I don't want that. The lighting needs and the cleanliness needs I need for sex in terms of, okay, I'm not feeling nauseous or gassy when I come in a room because of it already being a pigsty before I get in there. Now, it's one thing if it, you know, it was clean, it ends up a pigsty once we're finished. That's ideal for me. But if it's already messy and you got just clothes all just lying around and there is negative odors coming through, then this is not going to work. I also couldn't sleep with someone that would that is capable of dishonoring my body. I couldn't sleep with someone that would make fun of my funny faces during sex. I couldn't sleep with someone that the sex is overly clumsy, overly aggressive. When they behold me physically, I don't want to feel like this is too much damn pain. And when they speak to me, I have to be fully protected. Dirty talk or no dirty talk, any kind of communication engaging, verbally, non-verbally, I have to be fully protected and fully respected. Because with sex, this is deeper than birth control. I'm talking about no matter what we say or do to each other, I am fully respected by you. I am fully protected by you. Right? Because I don't have a scarcity mentality like I was forced to. I kicked that shit to the curb. What I do have is I shouldn't be protecting myself all by myself. I shouldn't be respecting myself all by myself either. But it's like, look, we're everything that we say and do, we also have to remember to create healthy sexual triggers for one another. I already know what mine are. They are, and I'm pretty sure they already know what theirs are. But to have that, to have more created by simply being fully sensitized to each other, that's what matters to me. What I want to say and communicate is I couldn't sleep with anyone that the way they looked at me or the way they respond to me or react to me when it comes to sex and their gestures and facial expressions toward me when it comes to sex, I have to feel fully appreciated. And I have to feel the full humility coming from them. These are things that people don't think about when it comes to sex. Like, they also don't think about the fact that when it comes to sex, like for myself, I couldn't sleep with anyone that would compare me to other lovers in terms of my genitalia, in terms of not just my anatomy, but my entire physical framework. I couldn't sleep with anyone that would shit on me for my sexual past. And I couldn't sleep with anyone that can't accept the fact that, you know, yes, did I have affairs back then? Yes, but it wasn't because of male pigginess. It was women that I was taught to be the Messiah complex when it came to women, as y'all already heard me say. And the only times I should be honest about the affairs was these were already failing relationships and they were all mistreated by male pigs. Emotional abuse, even financial abuse. A lot of, you know, spending most of their time with their mistresses and not being an everyday presence in their kids' lives, spending more time with the mistresses and the families that they created with the mistresses more than the biological kids and the from their marriage. So it was a lot of that going on. And some were just deadbeat parents, absent parents, and, you know, these were just guys who did whatever they wanted and didn't come home a lot, barely at home. So these were women that were already in awful dynamics and disgusting arrangements. So I never slept with any woman that had a healthy marriage, a healthy life partnership of commitment, even if it didn't include marriage, but they were still monogamous and having a serious relationship. I never slept with those because there would be no reason to. But I was, it's hard to say wired, I would say instructed to sleep with those who their relationship basically is non-existent. So that's what happened. And again, I say it to people even more because sometimes when people hear something, they're still not understanding it. So I want to make it clear, I am not applauding any of these things. Normally, I don't do affairs. Normally, I don't have sneaky, I guess the word dynamics, for lack of a better word, with another person. And I'm not hard on myself when I talk about this. I'm just being honest about the fact that I've learned what my true sexual character is and is not. I had time to think about it. I've been celibate for a few years now, and it was involuntary celibacy. I was just so focused on rebuilding my relationship with sex and building my relationship with sex back better that I just didn't suck or fuck, to be real. And I had to alter the dynamics for myself, because what I learned that really troubled me was I thought about how, like in my book, it's easy to look at my book and go, oh, he is parading what he did. No, I'm telling the truth about what happened, but I'm also giving insights on this is what happens when, like, to be honest, did I see a lot of mistresses when I was a child? Yeah. Did I see a lot of male mistresses, for lack of a better word? Yeah. If I didn't, and did I see my mom's brother cheat? Yeah. So, the moral of the story is, if Antonio didn't live with his mom's brother, and if Antonio didn't grow up in organized crime, I never would have been the one that women would cheat with. I'm talking about the ones during my college years. I never would have been in an affair. I never would have been the side piece. I never would have been the live-in side piece either. I grew up in a world where it was basic. The people in my past, in the past, when my childhood, you thought Joe Kennedy was a horn dog who was misogynistic toward his wife, and his sons followed that pattern of being a horn dog, being misogynistic toward their wives. The world I was in was worse than Joe Kennedy. Not to diss the Kennedy family, but how their views on marriage and sex is publicly well known. The historians have already said it, so I'm only saying what was already been said about them. But in the organized crime world I was in, way more misogynistic, way more horn doggy than them. Not to compare indiscretions, not to compare immorality, but I'm just saying it was much worse. So I had to learn how to have sex with full pleasure of my soul, full pleasure of my body, full pleasure of my mind, full pleasure of my memories, full pleasure of my heart, because during those affairs, I never completely enjoyed the sex, because there was treachery and trickery attached to the sexual liaisons, right? And so what I decided to do with my own sex life, I said, okay, I have to really get to know a person in terms of, I need to know that there are no trauma complexes attached to what we do, don't do, say or don't say, feel or don't feel or think or don't think, sexually speaking with one another. And I couldn't sleep with someone that not only would shame me for the affairs part, I couldn't sleep with someone that would go, oh, well, you had bisexual sex in college, so I can't be with you. And I'm like, wait a minute. That happened? Yes. Because I was doing my best to understand myself sexually, and I didn't have a manual or a booklet or any instructor, what a lot of times what survivors do is we learn about ourselves. We have inklings and feelings that are unclear to us. It's not fully clear. So in real life, am I sexually fluid, gender fluid, as you already know? Yes. I didn't know how to properly channel it back then, but I do. So me having sex with people, not all of them being women, that is innate, one of the innate parts of who I am. And at the same time, it was mischanneled back then. Okay, Antonio, intimate physically with women, that's innately part of who he is, but it was mischanneled back then. And I know a lot of people listening would go, you seem to talk about yourself and construct criticism, but not them. Well, here's why I can acknowledge that their role was 'sickening, revolting, repugnant, repelling, and repulsive. Those are the R words I tend to use the most. So I can give them constructive criticism. It's just that for me, I'm not soft on them, because in my book, I talk about what we both did wrong, you know, and I say that in a way that still is gentle to myself, gentle to them. But I do acknowledge that we were both erroneous, and what we did was immoral. So there, because it, the reason why I'm gentle with it, because it wasn't an intentional, I want to fuck your life up and you're going to fuck my life up. No, it was, we were all survivors. Now, rape and homosexuality are never the same thing. Don't ever put them together. One's consensual, the other is non-consensual. Moving on. So, I would say the people I was with in college, the men and the women, we were all survivors of some type of trauma. And we knew we were sexual beings, but it was profoundly misdirected. So our sexual orientations were already in place, but the living them out was of incorrect usage. That I can say. So what I figured out was, I said, okay, now that I have done the healing work sexually, what I can do is say, well, anybody that cannot accept my sexual orientation and gender identity, you know, being non-binary that I am, because, you know, then... So, I couldn't be with anyone that would also not accept the fact that I am a survivor of every kind of sex crime you could think of. So, me going public about these things, I understand I'm a public figure. And when you're a public figure, it's human nature for some people to want to be intimate with you. And as long as they're intimate with me for all the right reasons, because then I'll be intimate with them for all the right reasons, that's fine. I just like to be honest, because I know that it keeps me legally protected. And it keeps me safe in terms of sexually, because it weeds out the people that aren't supposed to be there. And the people that are supposed to be there, it brings them in. Now, as an ambiamorous person, the quality may be so slim to none, I may just have one. maybe a handful, maybe a few. I don't care about the numerals or numeration or numbers. I don't really care. But I really felt like, well, I've learned to be a high quality lover with a high quality heart, a high quality mind, a high quality soul. And to create high quality memories, that's the thing. And I do not want any trauma secrets attached to my sex life. That was the thing that's keeping my sex life into a dungeon related bondage, so to speak. I'm not talking about BDSM, I'm talking about erotic entrapment. Let's just put it that way. Sensual suffocation. And fleshly claustrophobia. Let's put it that way, too. So I have learned all the lessons I needed to from that time in my life. I now know that sexually I have the right people in my phone to help me to overcome any kind of sexual unethicalness. I'm not sexually unethical. I'm just saying that you do have vultures out there that want to put you in sexual heartless situations and sexually dysfunctional situations. So there, I've learned to protect myself from the sexual vultures, the sexual brood of vipers, the sexual whitewashed tombs. These are the type of people that on the outside, they have the physical figures that biologically make you want to dance, but their sexual values are garbage, and they treat people as their sexual garbage cans. So I've learned to stay away from people who are also sexual hypocrites. I've learned to avoid those who are sexually sly, like sexual foxes. I've learned to avoid those who are just, when it comes to sex, they're basically spiritually sexually blind guides. That's not ableism. I'm talking about when it comes to empathic sex and empathetic sexuality, they refuse to acknowledge that they see it. So it's like spiritually blind guides when it comes to sex. That's what I mean about their sexual blind guides and sexually spiritually blind guides and their sexual blind fools and spiritually sexual blind fools. And they're just refusing to pay attention to the need for sexual neighborliness and neighborly sex and neighborly sexuality. I've learned to dismiss these types of people. I've learned to avoid people who have hearts of sexual condemnation. They're sexually stony-hearted people. Like, what they're willing to put people through sexually shows that they're just sexually inhumane. And I've learned to avoid those types. I've learned to avoid those sexual devils, the type of people who don't care that which what they want to do sexually destroys their families, destroys their friendships, destroys their workplaces, destroys their entrepreneurial businesses, and destroys their house of worship if they're faith based, destroys the secular institutions if they're non-religious, and, you know, destroys governments and destroys countries, destroys continents, destroys cities, destroys states, destroys counties, destroys islands, and destroys children, destroys adults, and destroys the media, destroys neighborhoods, destroys communities, and just, they're sexually destructive everywhere they go. And I've learned to evade people, meaning avoid people, who engage in sexual self-destructive behavior. Basically, when it comes to sex, they're just maniacal, diabolical, perverted, extremists. The neediness, the sexual clinginess and sexual neediness shows that they are sexually desperate people to the point where they're willing to lie to themselves sexually and lie to others sexually. And they're willing to have pleasure that's not even pleasurable to them. I've learned to avoid such people. And these are sexual lessons I'm teaching myself. So, in other words, when it comes to my partners, yes, I know that I've been very public about my sex life, but I wanted to show the evolution between 5-year-old me and me about to be 30 this year. So the way I talk about it, it's very gorgeously enlightening all around and beautifully wise in each and every area of life. That's what I've been doing. So, in other words, what I share does not violate anyone's privacy or confidentiality. And some people say, what about porn? Even in porn, right? I have felt this sense of, well, I know that the type of porn I would do, it would never, no one's humanity would be shitted on in any kind of fucking way. And I don't do porn for shock value or say or do anything out of shock value. I just have shock value. Mine is inbuilt. I just want to have the world get used to generosity sold people like myself. SOULED. That's what I want. If there is shock value, it's healthy shock value. Shock value is not always bad. It's dependent upon the user and the usages of it. But my sex life now, I would say that for me, and this is all off the top of my head, I'm learning how to do episodes like this. for me, I've also learned how to sexually vet people. Because when you recognize that potentially eroticism could be exchanged between myself and them, I've learned that, do they think before they suck? Do they think before they fuck? Are they willing to do what's sexually necessary? Are they not willing to do what's not sexually necessary? Is it sexually helpful? Is it sexually true? Is it sexually kind? Does it sexually improve upon the sexual silence? I want to make clear what I mean. To sum it up, is it sexually true? Is it sexually helpful? Is it sexually inspiring? Is it sexually necessary? Is it sexually kind? Before you fuck, think. Before you suck, think. That's how I am when it comes to sex. And those are the questions I ask myself. Does it sexually improve upon the sexual silence? What that means is what we're saying, verbally, non-verbally, does it complement the silence that we just had? That's something I another thing I've learned to do is really imagine And when it comes to sex, I've taught myself these things. If you don't have anything wholesome to say, don't say anything at all. If you don't have anything wholesome to do, don't do anything at all. If you don't have anything wholesome to think, don't think anything at all. If you don't have anything wholesome to feel, don't feel anything at all. Those are the things I teach myself when it comes to sex. I've learned, don't verbally speak nor non-verbally speak unless you can improve upon the verbal silence and the non-verbal silence. Another sexual teaching I taught myself. And this is what I taught myself when it comes to the golden rule. I sexually treat others as I would like others to sexually treat me. I do not sexually treat others in sexual ways that I would not like to be sexually treated. What you wish sexually upon others is what you sexually wish upon yourself. So, I've taught myself the sexual ethic of sexual reciprocity. So I've taught myself the sexual golden rule, the sexual silver rule. And that is so important for me to live by. And the reason why I put it that way is because a lot of people don't consider that even when it comes to relations. And so, what I had to learn was this. When it comes to sex, I am sure to taste my words before I spit them out. Again, when it comes to sex, I am sure to taste my verbal words before I verbally spit them out. And when it comes to sex, I am sure to taste my nonverbal words before I spit them out too. And so, I taste my verbal words before I serve them to others when it comes to sex. I taste my nonverbal words before I serve them to others when it comes to sex, too. I watch my sexual thoughts, for they become sexual words. I watch my sexual words, for they become sexual actions. I watch my sexual actions, for they become my sexual habits. I watch my sexual habits, they become my sexual character. I watch my sexual character, for it becomes my sexual destiny. So I've learned to have wholesome sexual thoughts, wholesome sexual words, wholesome sexual actions, wholesome sexual habits, wholesome sexual character, and wholesome sexual destiny. I know that my sexual verbal words and my sexual nonverbal words can sexually build or sexually destroy, and I'm very sensitized to that. And that is how I've learned to consider sex for myself. And I'm just taking a breather. I'm just so thankful. That I have lovingly lectured myself about these things. I'm sorry, I was just so quiet because I was so busy thinking sexually to myself. So I'm gonna tell you what I thought sexually to myself. Sexually harsh words can sexually hurt and sexually scar a person more than physical pain. Think before you sexually speak. Think before you sexually do. Think before you sexually feel. And ask yourself, is it sexually beneficial? Sexually think before you sexually speak, verbally, non-verbally. Your verbal sexual words, your non-verbal sexual words could hurt someone's sexual feelings and just feelings in general more than you sexually attended it to. Before you say something, verbally, non-verbally, sexually speaking, stop and think how you feel if someone said it to you, sexually speaking. with their sexual words and sexual actions. Sexually think before you sexually speak. Sexual words, verbal and non-verbally, can sexually hurt, and once it's been sexually said, you can never sexually take it back. I would rather not do anything sexually for days than let my sexual hurtful words echo on in someone's heart forever. And your sexual words can be sexually powerful. They can sexually hurt or sexually uplift. So sexually think before you speak, as every sexual word counts. Sexually think before you speak, because sexual words can hurt. Sexual words can hurt. Think before you sexually speak or sexually post something. Recognize your sexual triggers. Mentally say pause, sexually speaking. Take those sexual deep breaths. Sexually observe, sexually mentally press play. Sexual hangman is a great game. It teaches you that the wrong word, sexually speaking, can be powerful enough to end someone's life. Not just sexually, that too, but all around. Sexually think before you sexually speak, because your sexual words can sexually hurt a person. You may lose that person in your life. You don't know what the other person is going through sexually, so make sure your words are well sexually. That's how you mean well sexually. Be careful with your sexual words, verbally, non-verbally. Once they are stated, it's possible that they can be forgiven, but it's impossible that they'll be forgotten. The sexual tongue has no bones, but it's sexually strong enough to break a heart. So be careful with your sexual words. So, we cannot solve our sexual problems with the same sexual thinking we use when we sexually created them. Open your sexual mind before your sexual mouth. Don't sexually say it, don't sexually text it, or don't sexually post it if it causes stressful strife. So, this is officially me taking all these lessons in my in-person sex life off camera, as well as on camera. As they say, as older folks say, now and forevermore.